This podcast is brought to you in part by some really cool people. I like to call them my Patreon podcast producers. Make sure you check them out on Instagram, Daryl at Your Level Fitness and Amy at Gym of the Gym. That's G-E-M of the G-Y-M. Give them a follow, show some love. They are helping to make all this possible. And stay tuned at the end of the show for more details on how you can join this awesome group and have your name read right here alongside them. Are you Team Apple? I got to shout out all of you checking out this show right now on an iPhone, iPad, etc. In fact, nearly 70% of you are listening to me on one of these devices. It would mean the world to me if you took a moment to leave a review. This is one of the best things that you can do for this podcast to help get the word out. And while you're at it, leave reviews for some of your other favorite shows. I bet they would really dig it. Oh, yeah!
So you're a wrestling fan.
Oh, you can see the Hulk Hogan back there.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Wow. That's cool.
That was an eBay find. Found that on eBay, picked it up for about $6.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That's a 1989 original no holds barred movie poster.
Oh, wow. That's very cool.
Are you a fan?
And I'm not hardcore, but I grew up with my dad and my brothers watching wrestling every Sunday.
Right.
So I know some of the old timers, like from that era and even before that, like Chief J. Strongbow.
Oh, yeah.
The Grand Wizard, Mr. Fuji.
Ah, Mr. Fuji. I loved him and the way I hear there's a great podcast out now for the couple of wrestling fans that may hear this. Bruce Pritchard, he was a former agent for the WWE, and he tells a lot of great old time stories from that era. And I hear that Mr. Fuji is one of the great what they call ribbers. He used to play a lot of practical jokes. So I've always heard some good stories about him.
Oh, cool. it's a fun thing. You know, it's kind of like its own form of drama.
Yes.
And I sometimes the characters are very compelling.
100%. That's what drew me in as a kid. I got started in 91. I mean, I was kind of exposed to it even before that. I'm going to be 37 this year. So probably around 87, 88, it was kind of like briefly exposed to it. But in 91 is when I really kicked it into high gear and started watching it like a maniac. And my mother, that was like the very first thing that my mother would take away if I got in trouble was no wrestling. Like you're grounded from wrestling.
I'm sure that was effective too.
Oh, very effective.
So you watched DDP then when he was a wrestler?
Yes, yes. He was in the competitor, WCW, in the mid-90s when it was getting really hot. I actually wasn't a big WCW fan. I was more of a WWF guy. But when he came over, I mean, I was obviously aware who he was, but when he came over to the WWF, although he had a brief stint, I started to learn what he was all about. And coming to find out, I think it was 2008 when I found out about at that time YRG, it was a complete shock to me. I had a buddy of mine that I guess took a class with him in LA years ago. This would have been 2008, maybe even 2007. He's like, "Oh yeah, I saw DDP one time and he was doing yoga." I'm like, "What? He's doing yoga?" He's like, "Yeah, he's doing yoga." And so that was a complete surprise. And from what I see checking up on your page is that you actually got started with this not too long after that, 2009. Is that correct?
Yeah, January of 2009.
Wow. So
this is my 10-year anniversary.
10 years with was it still YRG in 2009?
Yes, it was.
Ah, okay. Okay. How did you find out about it?
Well, because I'm a chick, you know, I mean, I stopped following wrestling probably around 1990.
Right.
So, and I just missed his ascent, you know. And
oh, yeah.
So I had no idea who he was, and which is probably a good thing, because I think I would have been weirded out by that.
Yeah. Who the hell is this wrestler guy that's doing yoga now? This makes no sense.
But I mean, if I had looked at him like a wrestling persona,
sure.
When he was mentoring me, I don't know. I'm just glad there was no other connection.
Right.
But I found out about him very by chance when I was watching Oprah.
Oh.
And it was. Are we recording yet?
Or? Oh yeah, we're. I realized you might not have heard any of my shows yet, but I let it roll. Like basically, what happens is the music hits and it catches us mid conversation because I want people to jump in as if they're in this like they're just overhearing, they're eavesdropping on this natural conversation.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, great. So this is definitely, you know, this is how I got started. And it's funny because I had no plans to make this change. I had pretty much given up. I had tried everything since age 9. I was a chubby kid and I was put on my first diet. And that just set me up for diet binge, you know, the two extremes most of my life. And by the time I was in my early to mid 40s, I was just so worn out. So I just said, you know, this is going to be my life. I'm going to accept it and just be as happy as I can. And so it was January 5th, 2009. I happened to have a doctor's appointment that day. And that's the day I found out my all-time high weight, which was 345.
Right.
And so I went home and I knew through an advertisement that Oprah was going to be talking about how she fell off the wagon. So I thought, oh, I want to hear that. You know, I can relate.
Yep.
I can relate to that. And that's all I knew when I tuned in. And one of the guests was Carney Wilson. Do you know who she is?
Yeah, from Wilson Phillips.
Yeah.
I'm really showing my age here now.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, that was still, you know, they've kind of resurfaced and are touring again.
Yeah.
But they were a huge hit in the 90s. And Carney, I knew of her for a long time, not just really, not because of her music, but she was always such a media target because of her weight.
Right.
And she was like me since childhood, struggling with weight, and it just escalated as she got older. And I saw her that day looking so amazing. And it wasn't just her size. I mean, she was fairly thin, the thinnest I'd ever seen her, even after her gastric bypass surgery.
Right.
She was just happy. She was glowing. And that really made an impression on me. And very briefly, she said that she got help from a man named Dallas. That's all she said.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of time to go into it. So I did a Google search and found him. And at the time it was called YRG. And I found how to order the DVDs. And I think, there's so many things to say about my story, but
take your time, whatever you want to say.
It was just after years of struggling and actually, when I was in my 20s, I lost 100 pounds twice.
Yeah.
I was so determined to do it. I just, you know, I white knuckle dieted, but I didn't do any, work in here. I didn't do any of the inner work. And I had a lot of wounding from my childhood, from being a fat kid,
yep,
from being made fun of and bullied and all that, and a lot of low self-esteem. So all I had done with those two weight losses was fix the exterior, and that was a house of cards. So I immediately regained the weight. And then I just decided, this is what I liked when I came across your Instagram account, because I don't usually hear guys talk about how important self-love is.
Yeah.
And you know, they you know, I get it. Guys are guys. And then they want to talk about the workouts and the weight loss and the beast yeah. mode, you know.
Beast mode, yeah.
Just about in every one of your posts, you said, you know, you did it through all those things, through working out and changing your eating habits. But very, very important part of it was self-love. And I was like, wow, somebody else gets it. Somebody,
yeah.
You know, because that's the core. I mean, if you're an emotional eater like I was, you know, I could certainly go through periods of discipline where I would put myself on a diet, but I would always backslide. Mm-hmm. So I knew something had to be fixed. And so what I'm trying to say is by the time I found YRG, which is now DDP Yoga, which is now DDPY,
yeah.
I had done a lot of inner healing. So I was ready. I mean, I was really ready for a complete change. And I had really spent so much time healing the wounds. I went to therapy. I went to Overeaters Anonymous, where I got a lot of emotional support. I even went to a food rehab
once
for a month. And that was really intense because that's nothing but, I mean, you're basically confined and your day consists of a little bit of exercise, but then the rest is all therapy and all getting to the root of what hurt you and what's still hurting you. So I had done a lot of work, and that's what I tell people who write to me and my clients that I coach. You can have, I mean, DDP yoga is a very sound workout plan, as you know.
I mean,
when I started it, I was 345, and believe it or not, I could do some of the moves, not all of them, but there was quite a bit I could do. And with each workout, my body responded and it got stronger and more limber and I felt better. So that's definitely important. Food is important. How much I eat is important. I notice when I'm gravitating towards certain comfort foods or when I'm gravitating towards more quantity than I usually eat, I know that that's a red flag that, you know, as an emotional person and as someone who, you know, my go-to is food. I don't drink.
Yep.
I don't do drugs or anything. Food is it for me. I mean, but I no longer look at it as a vice and I don't look at it as something scary. I had to really just throw away all those things that were told by the diet industry, you know, like that we're out of control and we can't be trusted with food and, you know, we're weak. And that's not true.
No.
I just had to learn to get to know food again and all, more importantly, to get to know my body and be a friend to my body and not such a mean, you know, critical person that I was. I was, you know, I said terrible things to myself.
Oh, yeah.
In my old life. And I'm sure you can relate, right, to some of this.
100%. I mean, there's so many things there. I mean, number one, to circle back to the self-love part, I'm a firm believer, Stacy, that if you don't love yourself, it's game over. And so for me, it's like, if I can't even get to that point, I might as well not even bother to try, because I feel like if you don't have it straight up here, and for the people that can't see like we can see right now, I'm pointing directly at my head, and we need to get that relationship under control. Now, part of that is done while you're going through the weight loss process, but you have to be conscious of it as you start, because it is going to be a very big part. Just like you said, you know, the house of cards, you're building the outside, but you got to work on the inside too, because this is really where it counts. This is the thing that drives the machine. This is what keeps us going day in, day out. And we got to get that relationship under control. We need to at least begin that process before we can ever worry about, you know, the rest of it. It all starts with that. So I can 100%, actually, to hell with that, I can 1,000% understand where you're coming from with that. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just you have to. I operate on four pillars: patience, consistency, hard work, and love yourself. But that love yourself, that's a big one. They're all big in their own way, especially that patience one, because everybody's in a hurry.
Yeah.
But the love yourself is far greater. You really got to get that under control, or at least begin to get that under control.
Yeah. And just start from any kind of starting point. Even if your starting point is, wow, I don't believe I can love myself, but this sounds good. Maybe I'll think about it. What I discovered was I got so tired of beating myself up and thinking badly about myself. I was literally worn out. I'd had enough. And then I started to question, you know, society and what I was told since an early age. I started to question it. Well, wait a minute. Does my weight really make me less of a person or a bad person? And I'm like, that's completely illogical. So that's out the window. And even though in the very beginning, I liked the idea of loving myself, it was a process. And at first I didn't fully believe some of the things I was saying to myself, some of the nice things, but that's okay. You don't have to believe it, because the mind, if you are repetitious, you'll wear the mind down, you know, like eventually, you know, as we're born into this world and we're completely innocent and we have these open hearts and we're equipped to love and to laugh and all that. And then sometimes it, fortunately, it gets paved over with negative stuff. Well, didn't the mind somehow agree to believe the negative stuff? Yep. Yes. So you can turn it around, and it does take time. That's why I like your pillar of patience, because it doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen. A lot of the diet industry and some of these books, self-help books, really, they love to use little time increments, like 6 weeks or 6 days. And, you know, that's just not reality. Don't compare yourself to anybody else's journey. Everyone's is different.
Yeah.
You and I both achieved similar things, but I'll bet our journeys were as unique as our fingerprints, right?
Because definitely.
That's how it should be. There's no one size fits all for getting your life back into balance.
Right. And the thing about it is, it's like, you know, the diet culture, and especially it's very prevalent on Instagram. You know, I'm a part of a huge weight loss community, whether it's weight loss surgery or the keto people, the paleo people, the Weight Watchers people. And there's what I like to call these sharks in the water that are circulating. And these are the people that are trying to sell, you know, some kind of fancy dream about, you know, you take these pills, you put on these wraps and all these different things that they're trying to sell. Or there are some coaches, you know, and they prey on the insecurities of these people, because they know people, every January, first of all, somebody's starting a new journey, right? And so we know that in January, we got to hit them hard. They're going to be at the gym. They call it like tourist season. I've heard people refer to that, and it makes me absolutely sick. And then, you know, you have all these different businesses that are trying to sell people on this idea of what they can do. I was at the gym, you know, and I see all these different so-called programs that, you know, you can achieve all the success with minimal working out, and you just take these pills and you can sit on the couch. And I'm like, this is a lot of bullshit, excuse my language, but I see these things on TV and they're just selling these lies to these people. And so what do these people do? They open up their wallets, because 9 times out of 10, when you're starting one of these journeys that is probably going to fail, you're going to unload your wallet. You think that you have to buy these things to get prepared, and then you get started, and probably what, 2-3 weeks in, you're already quit. You've already done. Yeah. And then you repeat the cycle once a year, maybe twice a year, until you finally figure out that, number one, you don't need all. So how I got my start was, I literally just went on a treadmill and started walking. And I said, you know what, Stacy, I said to myself, like, can I walk on this treadmill for 1 hour? Like, it literally was that simple. And for people that maybe they're not comfortable with the gym, I can identify and I understand with that. So maybe you go outside and you walk. But the idea was, set an attainable goal that I know is possible, and then achieve that goal, not set something that I know that is not possible, that I'm just going to set because it kind of sounds cute and, you know, all this stuff. It's like, let me set a relatable, a goal that I know I can do. So can I walk for 1 hour? And that's what I did. I went on that treadmill and I walked for an hour, and I repeated that over and over and over again for months. That's how slowed down I took it. I did the same thing literally over and over and over again. I practiced portion control, because that's definitely huge. You know, the relationship with food, as you mentioned earlier. And as I started going, I started changing it just a little bit, maybe add a little bit of incline on that treadmill, or maybe go a little bit faster on that treadmill. But the point was, I just kept going. That's all I knew, that I had to keep going no matter what.
Wow. And that's the key, is you set yourself up for success by not, you know, giving yourself this grandiose, like, oh, I should be jogging in, you know, in by next week or something.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong. Actually, to me, it's the only way of doing it, is just slow, steady progress. Because, again, it goes back to being kind to your body. If you go too hard on your body with either, you know, you're too strict with food, or you train too hard, your body's going to rebel. It's going to give out. It's going to protest.
Yeah. You know?
So doing just doable increments of movement and, you know, making food choices that aren't too, that there's a little bit of change involved. That's what I had to do. I had to really negotiate. Like I knew for the last, I don't know, five, 10 years before I found DDP yoga, I pretty much existed on simple carbs and a lot of fat, and everything was processed, and there was, you know, it was just, I just ate for my taste buds. So I knew when I, you know, I decided, okay, I do want to make some changes. The DVDs arrived. I didn't really do them for the first month because I was intimidated, but I just thought, let me just eat some more like food that's actually real food, you know, like let me go to the produce section. And I had, you know, I had some favorites that I, one thing I've learned from dieting is don't play the never again game.
Yeah.
Like there are things you really like, don't say never again, because who wants to live with that hanging over your head? And that's really, every time I did that to myself, I would set myself up. And then when I fell off the wagon, I fell off really hard, and I would eat, you know, with a lot of anger and rebellion, and just wasn't healthy. So I said, you know what, you have your favorites, like mine 10 years ago, I've actually grown out of it without even trying, but 10 years ago, fried chicken, so it was one of my favorite foods. And I said, have it when you really want it, number one.
Yep.
And number two, how about having it with vegetables instead of the biscuits and the gravy and the, you know, the mashed potatoes. And you know what? I did that. And at my discretion, I can't schedule, you know, things like that in the calendar. It's got to be when I'm really feeling it. But I lost all my weight doing that. Now, that's very counterintuitive to what the diet experts tell us.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I'd rather it worked, because it allowed me to keep my dignity, to keep the foods that I really loved. And it took all the power out of good food, bad food. There's no, you know, morally, in terms of morality, that's just ridiculous. But yeah, there are plenty of foods out there that aren't doing the body any favors. And I try to stay away from those. I mean, I've transitioned into real food, and I'm, you know, people ask me all the time what I eat. I'm not a fan of cutting out food groups. I've tried it. I tried doing no carb, and it just didn't work for me. But I'm mindful of carbs, because they do, you know, in a perfect world, I could metabolize, you know, rice the way I do broccoli, but it doesn't work that way. But I keep the carbs healthy, you know, like usually it's brown rice or quinoa. What else do I love? Oh, I love, you know, like steel cut oats and things like that. I just don't want to cut any one thing out, because I don't feel good. But, and I listen to my body too. What does it want to eat? A lot of times the cravings are directly tied in to what your body's needing in terms of nutrients. So don't dismiss cravings. Respect them, you know?
And not to mention, it's like, you know, when you say no more this, no more that, you also are messing. Again, it goes back to the mind. I mean, it really begins, it goes along, and it ends with the mind. So it's like you're really going to start messing with yourself internally when you start saying never this, never that. So what I'd like, for example, when I first got started, the only things I absolutely banned were like certain places, because for me, McDonald's was a huge trigger. I have a 70-mile round trip back and forth to work. And so every night, and I kid you not, Stacy, every single night, Monday through Friday, I was going to McDonald's. I could tell you my exact order. I had two, sometimes three McDoubles with the Big Mac sauce on it. I'd have a 4-piece nugget and a medium chocolate shake. And I would do this 5 days a week. And so what I did, I told myself, okay, no more McDonald's, no more going to that place. Not hamburgers are not banned. Going to that place is banned, and places that are like it that I've had similar problems, Wendy's, Burger King, things like that. So instead, I'm at home, I got a turkey burger, and instead of having two burgers, I'm having one burger, but I still put a cheese and a little sauce on it with the bun, but later I subbed out the bun with a wrap. But for me, I call it hacking the diet or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was taking things that I liked, and I was just finding different alternatives that felt better, you know, for me, and that I knew were less calories. So turkey burger instead of the red meat, you know, things like that. And that for me was huge, being able to unlock that, because in years past, like you said, you know, the diet culture, the diet experts will tell you, oh, you just can't have this, like none of this, you can't have any of it. I'm like, right. Well, actually I can. I still lost 100 pounds and I had this, but I had it with the proper portions.
Right. And didn't you, when you did it that way and you found a better alternative to what you were previously living on, I'm going to guess that you enjoyed it, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. See, there's a middle road between, you know, the boring diet meals, you know, and the stuff that's boiled and no fat and all that. There's a middle road because you have to enjoy your food. Otherwise, how are you going to move forward?
Well, that, and I, you know, I've since childhood, I've always been a very picky eater. So I would say for me, a lot of the stuff I have is repetitive, but at least it's stuff that I like and I can get it down to that proper portion, because there are just certain things, different foods from other countries and things like that, that I just don't touch. Uh-huh. But it just goes back to like textures and scents that really hold me back. But I, you know, I find things that I like and I just eat them in repetition with the proper portions.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, I sometimes have a narrow repertoire and I just have this a small group of stuff I really love. And that totally is okay. I mean, you don't have to be, you know, on this huge spectrum of variety.
Right.
You have to enjoy it, and hopefully it's got to have a fair amount of nutrition in it.
Absolutely.
You know, but I agree with you about triggers. I knew I had to really watch those, especially in the beginning. And so I did stay away from fast food places, except for I would allow myself one triple cheeseburger at Wendy's a month.
Yeah.
No bread, but it was a treat and I looked forward to it. And then, you know, some of these treats or maybe they could have been referred to as crutches, because think about it. I was completely, my eating habits, everything was broken.
Right.
When you have a broken leg, it does not heal quickly, right? There are so many stages. And that's how it was with my eating. You know, I didn't expect perfection or to be eating like a person with no issues around food and weight. I took it in stages. So in the beginning, I needed to do that thing at Wendy's. I think I did that maybe for a year or two.
Right.
Just gradually like faded away. But I still love, one of my trigger foods is potato chips.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And
which one?
Oh, God. Well, it's kind of a good thing. I like this because I like it so much that all the other potato chips I can't eat.
Yeah.
It's a, where do you live?
I'm in Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C.
Well, you might have this down there. It's called Gibbles.
Gibbles. No, I don't think I've heard of that. What's the flavor or the base of it? Like, what is the...
Well, this is why it tastes so good. They're cooked in lard.
Oh, jeez.
and I used to order them from the factory.
No kidding.
Oh, God. That's what I was eating when I was watching Oprah that day, when I learned about DDP. But obviously, those are not... I mean, I lived on those. I mean, every day.
Right.
I always made sure I had a stockpile of them. But I still love salty, crunchy foods, but I stay away from, and it's not that I don't believe I'm powerless over these foods, but they do trigger me, not just because I like the flavor, but they also bring back some kind of brain memory of when I was out of control.
I'll tell you what, not to cut you off. I don't want to lose this thought. I think about being powerless. When you mentioned Wendy specifically, that triggered a thought in my mind. And I don't think I've actually ever shared this on the podcast. So people here are going to get some new stuff. I remember being in high school and I had a group of friends. Now they like to smoke marijuana. I don't smoke anything. I don't smoke cigarettes. I actually lost a grandmother to lung cancer. So any kind of smoking, and they're like, dude, but if you just try it, like, we'll take you to Wendy's and we'll buy you whatever burger you want. Right. And so I'm like, no, I'm not going to smoke it. Like, there's nothing that you can say or offer me that is going to get me to take a puff of this marijuana. And finally they said, what if you just sit in the car and we quote unquote hot box you in the car and we'll take you to Wendy's and buy you whatever you want. Now in my mind, Stacey, I'm thinking, I want that classic triple with cheese. And when you said that, I immediately thought to this memory. And so sure enough, we sat in this car for probably 15 to 20 minutes and I got a contact high. I was not thrilled about it. And we went to the Wendy's and sure enough, the classic triple. And of course I told him that wasn't supersized at Wendy's, but I want to say it was like large or extra large, yeah. Extra large, the fries, extra large, the soda. And oh God, I felt completely powerless at that point. But at that time, for a temporary small window, I felt damn good.
Oh, man, I bet it never tasted better.
Yeah, you ain't kidding. So,
but, there is a middle ground. Now, if somebody just came into this conversation and heard me talking about a triple with extra cheese,
yeah,
they think, oh, yeah, that's crazy. You know, but my point is, you don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
I got no bread with it. I got no fries, no milkshake, nothing. And, I ate pretty healthy the rest of the day, but you don't have to lose everything. You know, you can enjoy what is important to you. And so I stay away from potato chips, but I love those little rice cakes. They're like little discs.
Oh yeah. Those are great.
They have them that taste like Cheetos or sour cream and what, onion.
Yeah.
They're good. And they, for some reason, a rice cake doesn't trigger me. But if I, one time I said, let me just, it's been a while, let me try some Fritos. And I could feel like the old stuff, like these are dangerous to me.
Yeah.
I had a small bag, but I'm like, it didn't feel right. Not that I felt bad or I'd done anything wrong, but it didn't feel like a food that was right for me anymore.
Right.
I don't know how else to explain it. And I willingly don't eat Fritos. It's not that I've banned them or I'm never again. It's just, I kind of expect more from food now. It can't just taste good.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll tell people that are listening, if you have issues with potato chips, one of the things that helped me, Stacey, this is huge. And this is kind of silly because we go in the aisle in the grocery store and we see the big bags all the time and we grab the biggest bag and we take it home. What I found that helped me, especially at work, because I sit at a desk, and what I found was buying the big bag that had the little bags in it. Uh-huh. And so what I'd do is I'd take that big bag and I'd empty out all the little bags into a drawer that has a lock on it. And so I would tell myself that I'm only allowed to have one of those in one day, not two or three over the course of the day, but one bag in a day. Uh-huh. And still to this day, I keep them in the drawer. It's like little Doritos and things like that, because my body still at times feels like it may need that. And so I say, okay, you know what? It's okay. You can have this, but this one little bag. And this one little bag ain't no more than about $1.40 in calories. Yeah. And so I feel okay with that decision. I'm okay with that decision.
Well, that's another example of the middle road. You don't have to cut it out completely. And it's a great example of putting some healthy boundaries on a food that you love. Because before I would just eat, I did most of my eating was very rebellious. I was so angry at whatever society and my parents and everybody who tried to control my food. I would just eat as much as I wanted, whenever I wanted.
Yep.
And now look where that got me. I mean, it might have been fun for a few minutes, but ultimately it got me in a lot of trouble physically. So it is the perfect thing to do, to take something like that, which is caloric and it's more of a fun food, and put a boundary on it.
Yeah.
And that's a process. Let me tell you, I wasn't ready to do that for a long time because, if you have emotional eating issues, people listening to this broadcast might not be anywhere near ready to have a small bag of potato chips.
Sure.
That's fine. Start wherever you can. I mean, just start being more mindful. I would rather see somebody eating potato chips than crackers, you know, because the crackers are full of gluten and wheat. At least potatoes, you know, they come from the earth.
Yeah.
And there's no gluten involved, and that means less inflammation. So even if that's a beginning, take it. I mean, I totally understand not being able to give up the food because for a long time I was in a toxic job, made me nuts. I was in an unhappy relationship, and my dad was slowly dying of Alzheimer's. And those three things were really, I mean, they were like a gang on my back.
Yeah.
I needed the food. I really did. I legitimately needed the food. I didn't have any other better coping options at the time. And it took a while to get to the point where I was willing to, you know, gradually release huge quantities of food. It takes time.
Yeah, I'll tell you another thing for the mind, you know, trying to test your mind and your willpower is like, I would set like what I call snack time at 10 a.m. So breakfast is like way at like 5 in the morning. And so this is like 5 hours later. And I'd say that, you know, 10 o'clock is snack time. So what I would do is at 9:45, I would take the bag out of the drawer and I would set it in front of me. And I'd tell myself, you cannot touch this bag until 10 o'clock. So testing that willpower, because the old me would just grab the bag, you know, like willy-nilly, just grab it, open it up, start going crazy.
Like
a wild child, and I would set it right in front of me. So I'm at the computer, I'm doing work, and I can see that bag in my peripheral vision. And usually it's like that Cool Ranch, it's like that blue bag, or maybe it's the red nacho cheese bag, and it's right there in front of me.
Yeah.
And I make myself wait for it. And there were times where I didn't even pick up the bag to eat it, you know, because I was like, wow, I don't really feel like I need that right now. And so that's when I started to get that better relationship with it.
Yeah, that is another powerful lesson, one that I took time for me to master, but delaying gratification.
Yes.
Isn't it? It's like survivable. I used to think, no. I mean, one time this was when I was at the toxic job. I was having such a horrible day. I went to my favorite diner and the waitress knew me. And I said, before you even bring me a menu, please bring me a bowl of macaroni salad. I had to start eating like immediately. I learned, you know, wait a minute, it's not the end of the world. It's actually not that bad to put it off and say I'm going to wait.
Yeah.
You know, and it builds some sort of inner strength.
Definitely.
It really does. So I think that's a great tool that you just shared.
Definitely. I hope that some people will give it a shot if you feel that it's right for you and see how it works. I always tell people, you know, try what you think is going to work, you know, for you, and don't always take exactly what somebody else says as the gospel, you know. Do your research and formulate your own opinion and try to customize things to make it best for you. I feel like if you're following somebody's plan, like 1000% to a T, and you don't always see that success right away, it kind of strikes you mentally and it makes you maybe want to give up or feel like you're a failure. And I feel like when we watch the DDPY and Dallas is constantly saying many times in the video, make it your own.
Yeah.
And that should be like on a billboard right as you're passing onto this road and is starting your weight loss journey. That should be like one of the very first signs you see, along with patience and loving yourself, but just right there, make it your own.
Yeah.
And I think that's huge.
And you know what? Another good reason to do that is because it starts to build trust with yourself.
Yeah.
Because I was always under the impression I couldn't be trusted. I didn't have the inner strength or whatever. I was an idiot when it came to food, you know, and I had to be told what to do. And that's just not true. To this day, like if I'm flipping through a magazine and I see like a 7-day meal plan, I just cringe.
Yeah.
I get like PTSD flashbacks, because there's nothing more depressing for me than trying to follow somebody else's, you know, daily food plan.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
Usually those things are woefully just boring and, they underfeed you and all that. So I had to learn to trust myself and figure it out. And yeah, sometimes I made, you know, there, I don't think there's any such thing as when you're feeling your way and getting to know yourself, there's no such thing as a mistake. It's just learning.
Yeah.
And also don't, you know, don't put pressure on yourself to, you know, you got to have a timetable. You're going to look like, like this certain, you know, fitness model by this month. Forget it. I'm never going to look like a fitness model, and that's okay. I'm just so happy to be able to wear jeans, and I weigh in the 100s after all 20 years of weighing over 300 pounds, and I can move around. I can fit into any chair. Yeah. I don't have to, you know, panic when I go to the movies or whatever.
Restaurant booths.
Yeah.
That was a big one for me.
Yes. flying on airplanes, that terrified me because of the small seats.
Oh yeah.
And just, you know, I don't have to wear black leggings every day. I mean, there's so, I don't get caught up in, I don't get caught up in how people are supposed to look. Well, how the fitness industries say we're supposed to look, because that's unrealistic.
Yeah.
And I think it's just designed to keep us hooked on whatever products they're peddling. You know, I'm living a really happy, healthy life, and I've sustained it for 10 years. So, clearly I'm doing something right.
No, and that's incredible. And I, you know, I'm actually, giving the DDP yoga another shot. I remember in 2013 was, an attempt at it. I gave it a shot, and I think I lost damn near 50 pounds in a little over 2 months, and it blew my mind. But because I wasn't quite ready up here, I gave up and gained all it back and then some, nearly died the next year. And it wasn't until almost 2 years after that moment that I finally got started again as far as on the weight loss journey. But about 2 weeks ago, I interviewed a man, Vance Hines. He had this incredible story centered around the DDP yoga. And I wanted to get him on because I saw his video and it nearly brought me to tears. I mean, I was just so blown away by this man's story. And we talked, and as we were talking, I realized to myself, I'm like, why the hell did I ever stop doing this yoga thing? Right? Like, why did I stop? Why did I give up? And I couldn't quite get the right answer other than I just wasn't straight mentally. And so now as I enter my second year of, you know, I called 2017 my awakening, and then 2018 was executing on the things I learned. And this year is continuing that, but taking on new challenges. And now that I know there's absolutely no circling the car back around and going the other way, we're just not about that life anymore. It's let's try something new, or something that I tried once before that's new again. And that's DDP yoga. So I'm today was my third workout back on DDP yoga, and it's been kicking my butt. And I was going to ask you about some of your early days, doing it. Cause I know you mentioned that, you know, you were kind of, before you even opened the DVDs, you were just kind of getting your food straight and whatnot. So when you actually started the program, you know, what were some of the things you were feeling as you were going through? And I know you said you could do some of the moves, but not all the moves. And what were some of the challenges maybe that you had early on?
Well, you know, back then there was a video for people. It was called 50 Plus, and it was designed for if you were 50 pounds overweight or over age 50. And it was a real easy, I guess it was an easy 20-24 minute workout. Similar to energy,
yeah,
which is one of their lighter workouts. And the funny thing is, I always kind of liked physical activity. Even back in my binging days, I would go to the gym and lift. So I didn't find the workouts themselves too difficult. But there were things I couldn't do in the beginning, like broken table. I couldn't balance. I just, you know, I had to hold on to a wall or a chair.
Right.
And I couldn't, you know, with a cannonball, I could not touch my feet. I just had to wrap my arms around my shins. And I did that for a long time until I realized, one day I just said, why don't you try it? Just give it a try. try, and I'm like, oh wow, I can reach my feet. I can grab my feet. So, you know, it was very doable. It was, and DDP, you know, the way he calls the moves, and he has a sense of humor. He makes the workouts enjoyable.
Yeah.
So they can feel so much like workouts. I mean, I've done DVDs where they're just so, you know, rigorous and they're kind of boring, and I feel like I might as well be in the Marines or something, you know. I mean, there's just no.
Very robotic.
Yeah. And so I think that helped me roll along. And then I started out, like I said, with just the intent of eating better food. And I wrote to DDP in the very beginning before I even started. And I said, oh, would you work with me? Because I knew something deep inside was different this time.
Yeah.
And how would he know that, you know? And he's like, no, you know, just order the DVDs, get to work, you'll be fine. So I joined the community, Team DDP Yoga, which is a great online resource. And Terry Lang, do you know who she is?
No, I'm not familiar with her.
She is known as the godmother of DDP Yoga because she's the one who really set Dallas kind of on a course of being a mentor for people who want to lose weight. She was his massage therapist and in her 50s at the time and had put on 50 pounds. And he kind of said, hey, you know, stop feeling sorry for yourself and do something about it. And he gave her the workouts and told her to, you know, experiment with gluten-free and all that. And she lost her weight and kept it off. And then he's like, wait a minute, if I did this with her, I can do it with others. So she was the one who got the whole ball rolling. And then Arthur was after that.
Oh yeah. That Arthur, I love that story.
Yeah. So, so Terry saw that I was, I said, hey Terry, you know, we had been emailing. I said, you're not going to believe this. I've only been doing this, 2 months and I'm down 30 pounds. And I was blown away by this, Gary, because I used to try starvation diets and cabbage soup and my weight wouldn't budge.
Right.
Why? Cause there was no love involved. I mean, like I was enjoying this. I was loving myself. And the weight just started to really go without struggle, not without effort. I mean, you know, as I love your saying, effort or hard work always wins.
Yes.
It's true. If you don't like effort, you're screwed.
Yeah. You're just,
I mean, there's no other way to say it. No one's going to do the workout for you. You've got to strengthen your body. You know, eating well is only part of the equation. And I was just blown away by 30 pounds. I mean, actually 20 in the first month before I started the workouts. Because I said, I'm not doing the junk food. You know, and that was just from 1 month. I went from like 10 years of living on junk food to a month of real food. And my body just let go of 20 pounds. It was like a miracle to me. And I just wanted to, that encouraged me so much. And I wanted to keep going. I didn't make too many changes in the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, that's overwhelming.
Yep.
Eventually Terry told DDP about me and he agreed to mentor me, with just like quick phone call, one phone call a week, like 10 minutes. But I found him so intimidating. I'm like, I'll do whatever you say.
Yeah.
And then he told me to go off gluten, which I didn't mind. But when he told me to go off dairy, I freaked out because cheese was one of the things I lived on.
Oh, yeah.
And because, you know, I knew he probably would stop working with me if I refused because he doesn't put up with nonsense.
Yeah.
I said, okay, I'll do it. And my plan was to try it for a month. And I'm like, I'm going to be so miserable and unhappy and probably not feel good. I'll just tell him I gave it a shot and it's not working. What happened instead was I felt so amazing. I felt my energy just go through the roof and the weight continued to really. So that was telling me that gluten and cow dairy were really irritating me.
Yeah.
I don't know how I lived all those years on those two substances, but when I let them go, and I let them go at about month 3. I don't recommend people make all these, you know, changes we're talking about in the beginning. Pick a few big ones And that's fine. That's all you need. Like your treadmill, pick one thing that you'd like to change and start from there.
No, I love that. Like this year I set up a couple of challenges, you know, for the first 2 years here, like one of the things I said in 2019, I want to try to go 365 days without having a single slice of pizza. Now, mind you, I still lost 100 pounds. I had pizza maybe once every other week or every couple of weeks, and it was fine. No big deal. A slice here or there. But I said, what happens if I try to give it up for 1 year? So now I'm about a month in and I'm okay with it. And I said, well, what if I could give up chocolate? This is something else, you know, it peeks through once in a while and, you know, you have a little bit here and there, not a big deal. And could I live without that? A month in, I'm doing okay. And alcohol, that was something else. So I like to have a few beers here and there. Could I give up the beer? Well, all alcohol, let's just say all alcohol. And so far I'm doing okay. Now, right now I'm 2 years clean on soda and the McDonald's and Wendy's, Taco Bell and all that stuff. And so it just dawned on me. I'm like, well, gee, if I just tell myself I want to try to go without this, what I'm finding is that I'm strong enough to be able to do it. Like I've not had one freak out or one panic that I didn't have a slice of pizza or a piece of chocolate. It's okay. It's crazy, yeah, but it's okay.
No. Yeah, but see, your mindset is in the right place. If you had tried to do that 5 years ago, you probably would have been rattled.
Yeah.
But, you know, and you have to know yourself. Like you've built up all this strength, like this inner strength from the past 2 years. And I think you're starting to realize, like, this applies to everybody. We're stronger than we realize. We're stronger than we know.
And stronger than we'll ever give ourselves credit for as well. I mean, we'll beat ourselves up far before we'll ever give ourselves a compliment. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But that, you know, that can change too. I mean,
definitely.
I still catch myself and I'm not 100%, not far from it. But when I catch myself being critical, I just notice it. And then say, that's not really the direction I want to go in with my thoughts. So let's turn that around. You know, the key is to just, in any situation, don't beat yourself up. You know, treat yourself like you would a friend.
Definitely. And when you look at old pictures of yourself, instead of insulting that person, you got to understand where that person's been. You know what I mean? It's like when I say love yourself, it's also part of understanding that this body that you once had, you know, that body stood you up in the worst of times. It kept you moving, kept you going. You better respect the hell out of that body because you wouldn't be here right now if it wasn't for that body.
Absolutely. There are all kinds of weight loss stories in magazines and on TV. And I used to hear people say, I don't hear it so much anymore, but you know, they look at their old selves and be so derogatory and disgusted. And I'm like, but you know what? We're the same people. We are still the same people, number one. And that is an excellent point that our bodies were such allies for us. Everything that they did for us to get us through those hard times and how resilient. I mean, sometimes I'll say to my body, you are so freaking resilient, you know, what I put you through. I mean, I lived on butter and potato chips and you know, sugary drinks. I'm like, how did we do this? I mean, you're amazing. So, yeah, I mean, I look at my old self and I really do think she was amazing because when you see old pictures and I have them on my website and on Instagram, it was at that size that I started to say all this crap ends, you know, and I started to treat myself better and then I would expect it from others. And I would start to sometimes if I had to confront people, I think it was a needed step because I never did that in school. I just sort of like shrunk back. The funny thing is, and this shows you the power of your mind and of energy. When I was in high school, I was like chubby, you know, but my self-esteem was non-existent. And I really believed that I deserved all the crap that, you know, that was being put my way. And so as a result, I got more crap, you know, because of my belief. When I reached that point where I'm like, no, I'm not taking this anymore, I was a lot heavier. I was like probably 100 pounds heavier than I was in high school.
Yeah.
But once I got it, once I integrated it and really believed it and started to put a different vibe out there, guess what? The crap stopped.
Yeah.
I was well over 300 pounds, but I was exuding this, don't fuck with me.
I love it. No, you're but, fine.
But it's true. I mean, and that's what gave me, that's why, that was to me, I'm just so proud of myself for, you know, even though the rest of the world, a lot of it thought, you don't deserve to feel this way. Well, yeah, I do. And I'm questioning it. And I'm writing my own rules.
No, I love that because I can identify being younger and being bullied as a big kid. Hey, fat ass, you know, and getting pushed around and all that stuff. And finally, when it's actually wasn't until after I got out of high school, very similar. It's like I stopped, you know, necessarily having some of those insecurities. And I turn it into like, hey, I'm that funny fat guy. Like I'm your friend. Like, you know, I even recall, this is going to sound so ridiculous, but I even recall a pickup line for the ladies was, hey, what do you want a six pack for? I got a keg right here. You know, kegs are a lot more fun than six packs and they last longer. You know, so I just remember like really, embracing it for so long and thinking that, you know, going a complete opposite of where I was before, where I was just insecure, getting bullied and getting, you know, picked on. And I really feel like even though I didn't get myself, together health-wise right then and there, I felt like I was starting to make that right turn and get down a right path. Maybe I was just a long way away, but yeah. I was slowly but surely getting started.
Yeah. And it's an inside job. So like I said, if you're listening and you're like giving up the food, it's out of the question right now. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine. We've both been there, and just start to talk to yourself differently. Start wherever you can, but just, you know that there's always hope and there's always a way out. Just don't give it a timetable. You know?
Yeah. There's always that light up ahead. You just gotta find the way to shine and find that, you know, and make your way to that light and get to that point you want to be. It just takes time and it's going to take years. I mean, you're talking about 10 years celebrating, getting started on DDP yoga. I mean, that's incredible. I have another friend, Nikki, she went 10 years plus and, you know, she looks phenomenal, feels phenomenal, you know, she's doing great. But it takes this long time. And I think people, they see others on Instagram, there's the constant comparison. Oh, well, hey, you know, he or she lost, you know, 100 pounds in 6 months. I mean, that doesn't even sound possible, but we'll just use that example. Like, wow, look at that. If only I could have that. And that's just not reality to what your body is. It's like you said earlier, everybody's situation is going to be different at the end of the day. So you can't compare. And you just got to focus on your own shit and just keep on going forward. No matter what, keep going forward.
Yeah. And the great thing is if you're working on your inner self and loving yourself, it's not going to matter getting the weight off quickly because you're already feeling okay with yourself. And the weight will stay off, has a much likelier chance of staying off for good if you lose it steadily.
Yeah.
Don't rush it. Don't push your body. Because you're going to get a rude awakening if you think that alone is going to bring you happiness. You know, remember my 200 pound weight losses in my 20s, they did not bring me happiness.
Yeah.
It was disillusioning, but I realized looking back, how could it have brought me happiness when I was doing it really to please others and I was doing it to finally feel and be okay with myself. And that doesn't come from fitting into a smaller size, you know, pair of pants. That comes, and I know some of you don't believe me because I was convinced all I need to do is lose the weight and I'll be happy. But I'm telling you, I did it twice and it's not the answer. Starting just with being kind to yourself, that's the yellow brick road that leads you to the Emerald City.
There you go. I love that Wizard of Oz reference.
Yes.
I love it. Tell me about, I was interested to find out that you did a book, and I'm actually in the process of laying out a book myself, you know, losing the first 100 pounds. It's titled Me Against Me, The Fight of My Life. And hearing that you've been there and done that, you've done a book, I'm interested to hear all about that.
Oh, well, yeah, my profession is I'm a writer anyway. I mean, I've been a journalist for like 30 years.
Wow.
And I knew, I knew part of the motivation was, like I said, I know that a big part of my longevity is I enjoy food and I look forward to it. You have to have things to look forward to. And I used to be a food writer, but I'd write about all kinds of decadent foods. And then I decided, well, now that I've had this change, I will write about healthy foods and give it, you know, how I gave them makeovers. And so I took a lot of my blogs and put those in my first book. And I created, along with my partner and fiance, he's known as Chef Bill. Mm-hmm. He used to be a culinary chef. Now he does something else, but he's still a great, you know, cook. And he helped me develop a lot of the recipes, you know, like the eggplant parm, the meatloaf, chicken soup, you know, comfort foods, but with better ingredients. And so my first book, which came out in 2014, the first half of it is my story, which I offer up as a blueprint to, you know, like you said, make it your own.
Yeah.
I don't expect people to take everything I'm saying and literally translating it to their lives. It's just a guide.
Sure.
And then the second half of the book is like 70 some recipes. And then I have another book. The next book after that was just Clean Desserts, because I know a lot of people have a sweet tooth. And they're everything in my book, all books are gluten-free. And my eating has changed. And you'll find as the years go by, your eating is going to just, you know, evolve and get different for whatever reason. But back when I wrote Clean Comfort, I was baking with a lot of like gluten-free, all-purpose Bisquick type things.
Yeah.
And then I discovered, you know, like paleo flours that are almond flour based, and they're just a little healthier. So, and I also started baking, believe it or not, with beans, with lentils, because they can take on any flavor. So when I have a bread craving, I'll make my version of biscuits out of the white beans.
Right.
You know, and then I'll put olive oil or butter, and they, you know, it's okay. I don't delude myself into, oh, this is just like a Bojangles, you know, big flaky biscuit. It's not, but
Bojangles.
I know. But I don't want the consequence. Of course it doesn't taste the same, but I don't want the consequence of a real biscuit. And then I wrote a third cookbook called A Bowl of Comfort, and it's any food served in a bowl, whether it's a dip or a soup, a stew. And my fourth book is, and that just came out a few months ago, it's called The Untended Soul, and that is all about the emotional part of the journey and some of the, you know, the pain I went through and how I overcame it even after my transformation. There's an essay in there that, you know, I still, doesn't happen so much anymore. I went through this phase where a couple people back to back, both women, scrutinized me, my appearance. And one was drunk and she was a friend of mine and it was at a funeral. And she's like, you know, and she was literally stumbling around the funeral parlor. I mean, making an idiot of herself. But she came up to me and she's like, you look really great, but you still have a fat ass.
Oh, you know?
And I'm just like, oh my, I mean, if it had been under normal circumstances, I probably would have said something to her, but out of respect for the family, you know, I let it go. And I knew if I talked to her a week later, she'd have no memory of it. And then somebody else made a remark about my weight, a friend of mine. And I'm like, you know, I can't believe I'm still having to deal with this, but and that particular friend I chose to have a talk with.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I was really taken aback by by what you said. And that's the only way to deal with it. You know, you can't hide. You can't hide when something painful comes up. That's how I manage my weight. That's another tool. In addition to, you know, being mindful about the food and, you know, agreeing to do the workouts, is when pain comes up or any kind of uncomfortable emotion, I feel it. I deal with it. And believe me, it gets easier with time. Now it's just like a habit, you know?
Yeah.
Because you can't, I really believe this about progress and evolution. I really don't think emotionally, once you cross a certain hurdle, you can't go backwards. You know, like I can't go into this level of denial that I used to live with 10 years ago or 15 years ago, because I've learned, I've been awakened, you know?
I mean, so
that's the good news. It's like, well, oh, this is going to be really uncomfortable. I've got to have a talk with this person, but there's no other choice, you know, because I can't go back. I'm not able to go into that denial anymore. You know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's huge, because like on a weight loss journey, right? Like you really, it's not just about learning what to eat and how to work out and getting your mind together. You actually learn a lot more along life. Like, and you want to try new things. You want to challenge yourself. Getting on a podcast like this right here with someone that I've never spoken to outside of a couple of DMs is something I would absolutely have never done before. But Stacey, every one of my podcasts, or nearly every one of them, 95, 97% of them are with people that I've never actually like spoken on the phone with before. And we hit record and we just start talking. We're an hour plus into this and we're having a great conversation. So it's like, you know, I've learned a lot more to open up and to challenge myself and to meet new people and to have talks with people that maybe would have been uncomfortable before. But it's all these things about coming out of your shell and just living enough of the walking around and just existing to exist. We get one shot in life. We get one shot. And so we better make the most of it. We ain't got time to be just walking around existing. We got to live this life, Stacey. You know, right. You know about that.
Oh yeah. Oh man. Look at the energy you have.
I would have never had this before.
I know. I mean, I used to be like on the couch most of the time. Literally, I would look like I was half asleep.
Yeah.
But I was so drugged from the food and from, you know, the lack of activity. And, you know, I mean, I went through life half awake, because they all work together. Once I agree to go into that mindset and I need food as drugs, and now I'm drugged, and then I'm also agreeing to be in denial and not look at all this stuff that needs to be looked at. And that makes for a sort of a living coma, you know? And
oh, yeah.
That's how I lived for so many years, and I just don't want to go back there. You know, I have moments when I eat too much, you know, but I can only go so far, because I really don't like the feeling anymore of being overstuffed. I don't like it.
Yeah.
It feels very foreign to me now. When I have those times where I overindulge, I just like, okay, you did it. Move on.
Yep.
Move on. Beating yourself up does not, it doesn't do any good. It's toxic. The emotions are a big part of this for me, and managing them and just not running from them, you know, and just being honest with myself and with others. That's a huge part of it.
Yeah, definitely. And I also understand that you're doing coaching yourself. You mentioned this a little bit earlier, but talk a little bit about that, how you got into doing that. And if people are listening, you know, obviously you've said so many amazing things here today, and maybe they want to hit you up. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, that started, I would say, about 4 years ago.
Okay.
I had no plans to do it again, but somebody wrote to me and said, do you coach? And I got as soon as the question, you know, came on my screen, I could feel these butterflies, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't coach. I'm not a coach. What do I? Yeah. And then I thought, oh, you're scared. Okay. Guess what that means? That means you need to do it.
Yeah.
And so, I was honest. I said, I have never coached before. And she's like, I don't care. She goes, you clearly have a lot to offer. And you, you know, look at your story. And I said, I'm not certified or anything. And she said, I consider your life experience to be better certification than any, you know, that, I mean, those were her words. So I had that first client and it went really well. And I discovered I liked it. I really enjoyed it. So I have that on there as a branch of, you know, what I have to offer on my website. It's not, I don't have a booming coaching business, you know, because it's not for everybody. You have to be ready. You have to be very ready and, or at least ready to talk honestly about yourself and what's going on. You know, you might not be ready to give up the food. I don't demand that people do. Because that, I mean, you can't demand that of anybody. That's got to come from the person. But I, you know, it's a multi-pronged approach of everything we were talking about. You know, and I kind of let the client, you know, be the guide in terms of what they're ready to deal with.
Yep.
Then I support them in making whatever changes look viable. And there are different packages, you know, you can sign up for different levels of commitment, but if you really don't want to sign on for too much, you can sign up for a single phone call, you know, just to pick my brain. I mean, I've got a lot of experience and I've got some of the answers, not all of them,
right.
But I do have some of the answers that people tend to find useful. So, and then I have, you know, website with, I'm always coming up with new recipes and sometimes I'll write essays or whatever. And I'm an instructor. I got certified in DDP yoga level one, which was a really nice challenge. And I speak, you know, I do a little public speaking. This is from somebody who at school, I was like an elective mute. I didn't speak at school. And now I'm public speaking. I mean, that just shows you what kind of transformation is possible if you allow yourself that little luxury of being kind to yourself. That's where it all begins.
No, I agree. It's definitely something that I've always looked in, you know, something that I see is going to eventually happen because I think about my story and I think about everything that I've been through. And that's why I share so much. Because number one, I started it for accountability, you know, putting it out there on Instagram and things like that. And then once I started to see people coming on and checking it out, I'm like, okay, this is way bigger than just my own stuff. I need to help. So I just share as much as I possibly can in hopes to help other people. And, you know, I also offer coaching calls. I don't advertise it a ton because I know that there's kind of a stigma because you have a lot of these sharks in the water that have the wrong intentions. And I only want people to be ringing my phone if they really want to be there. You know, maybe they listen to the podcast. They like the mindset. I'm more of a mindset coach than I am. I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not an exercise person. I like to help coach on the mindset of it. And again, don't have any fancy degrees, but I've got life experience. And I think that speaks, you know, to a lot because you've been through so much and you can offer up these different scenarios and show people what is possible. When they just believe in themselves, and that's really where it starts. So, I think that's great. I really think it's great. And for the people that, you know, that want to check out your website, what is the website? Tell them where to go.
It's, my name, Stacey Morris, and that's spelled S-T-A-C-E-Y.
Yes. Put the E in there, folks, because I was typing in her Skype name and I was like, why isn't this coming up? And I realized I needed to put the E after the C.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Just stacymorris.com. And that'll take you to all my, my YouTube channel and my social media links. Check it out. And I hope you, if you stop by, drop me a note and I'd love to hear from you.
And give them the Instagram. We have a big Instagram engagement here on this podcast. It's kind of how this whole thing was started. I would bring on people, friends from Instagram, and they'd share their weight loss story. So give out the Instagram specifically.
Okay, let me just look. I want to be sure I have it right. It's just the Recovering, RECOVERING, American. And I don't, you know, somebody said, oh, this is, well, what, you don't like America? Yeah, I love America. but we can't be, you know, we can't whitewash it. I mean, the American diet really helped me get to where I was. I mean, we all have choices, but I feel a little bit, and I'm going to write more about this, but I feel really strongly about some of these food companies and fast food places have very predatory intentions, and they go after young kids.
Yeah.
If you notice, I've said this before and I've written about it, but in my opinion, McDonald's especially uses similar tactics that pedophiles use to lure kids, the playgrounds and the clown and all the, you know, the bells and whistles.
Right.
They deliberately go after kids. I was 4 when I had my first burger, and I had, you know, I would have burgers at other restaurants, but none of them tasted like McDonald's. And that's a whole other topic about how they engineer they hire these flavor engineers,
right,
to be more addictive and not also not very satisfying. So you're going to be hungry in a couple hours. But I got on that morphine drip, so to speak.
Yeah.
Age. And then couple that with being, you know, an unhappy childhood and seeking solace in food. And it's a horrible combination. So that's why I call myself the recovering American, you know, because I'm recovering from food culture and a culture that, you know, that's a whole other topic, too, about kids' experience at school. You know, schools are supposed to really, aren't we supposed to go there and get nurtured and encouraged and everything? And then at the very end of the game, at graduation, all you hear are all these positive affirmations. Go out there and you can do anything. Well, why didn't you tell us that from day one?
Yeah.
You can do anything every day. Don't tell us on the way out the door, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's definitely tweaks to be made in our country's system. But, you know, I'm not complaining. I feel very lucky to live here and be an American. And all that, we just need to work on a few things, you know?
Definitely. Definitely. Well, Stacy, I've had an absolute blast. I feel like we could go all freaking night, but I got to tell you, this has been a great conversation. I'm glad that we got to connect and hopefully the beginning of a friendship. I feel like we're buds now.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we jumped on and did this. And guys, go check her out at The Recovering American, StacyMorris.com, Stacy with an E. Don't forget the E right there. And let's catch up again soon.
Yeah. And congratulations on everything you're doing. Your Instagram account is so inspiring.
Thank you.
It kind of reignited me. I'm like, oh man, I don't know if I'm working hard enough here. So it was really nice to come across you on Instagram. I'm glad we connected and I look forward to staying in touch with you.
Definitely. Will do. Have a wonderful night. And thank you so much for your time. Okay. I really appreciate you taking the time to join me tonight. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary.
Remember at the beginning of the show, I mentioned a little thing called Patreon? Well, I'd love to have you join me. But Gary, what is Patreon? It's a website that is helping small creators like me raise funds to further expand their creative visions. For as low as $1 a month, you can help me further my dream of reaching as many people as possible and eventually taking the show on the road to meet all these fine people face to face and add a video element to this podcast. If you were to donate $4 a month, you'd be hearing the show a few days earlier with no commercials and getting access to my close friends group on Instagram. Donate $10 a month and you get all that plus your name right at the beginning of the show alongside other producers. But act fast, that tier is limited to 10 people. I've got a whole lot more to offer and you can get all the details over at patreon.com/Gary Cantrell. If you made it this far, I really appreciate you. Thanks so much for checking out the show and I'll talk to you again really soon. HardWorkAlwaysWins.com. It's more than just a clothing line. It's my mantra. I speak it, I wear it, I live it, and I'd love to have you join the Hard Work Squad. We're constantly adding new items to the store, including our brand new future-ish hats, which come in a variety of colors, including camo. I mean, who doesn't like camo? We also just put our famous Splash logo in gold to match our OG logo, and there's so much more here. You just got to check it out. Here's the best part. Use the code PODCAST at checkout to take 10% off of your very first order and join the Hard Work Squad today.